Afternoon, sunshine, about 86 degrees in downtown Bangor. We're live in the air-conditioned comfort of Seasons. Main Street, right across from the Waterfront Concerts. And, of course, InterQuality Jewelry Studios. Rich Kimble, Ryan Waning with you this hour. Jabron Graham checks in to let us know all that's happening in the area with Downtown Weekend. Some beer insight from Tim Bissell on the Three Pints Dance. Later in the show, a Throwback Thursday conversation with Sean McDonough on his new Monday Night Football gig. And author Jennifer Armstrong talks about her new book, Seinfeldia, on the history of the TV show Seinfeld. Right now, though, time to talk a little football as we're joined on the G&M Family Market phone line by Mike Giardi of Comcast Sportsnet New England. Mike, good Thursday afternoon.
Said you, Rich, you know, Tangway was telling me stories about you and him back in the day, so I'm going to hold that over you at some point.
I would be worried, but I know the worst of the stories Tangway has absolutely no recollection of.
That's actually fairly true, yes.
And I have dirt on his Rumford days, and those were the really scarring ones for him.
Well, I might have to pick your brain for those.
I will share, but not on the air. That whole FCC thing scares me. Here we are, Mike, a week away from the season opener, at least the exhibition season opener for the Patriots. How's the first week or so of camp gone, and what are you noticing about the club?
You know, there's obviously a little bit of extra curiosity in the sense that, you know, last year we had the questions, would Brady be suspended? Would that be upheld? So we were watching Garoppolo closely to begin with, but now you know that Jimmy's the guy for those four games. So it's a little bit different feel to it just from where we sit and watch, you know, knowing that all that time we spend watching Brady normally as you start to get ready and gear up for that first preseason game, you're spending probably more time watching Garoppolo than I am Brady now, trying to, you know, get a grasp of where he's at and what he needs to do or what I think he needs to do to be able to run the ship for those first 4 weeks of the regular season.
You kind of hear two extremes. You hear the people who look at those college numbers and say, boy, this guy's going to be great. Tom Brady's going to be looking for a job 4 weeks into the season. The other extreme, the people who say, look, he played FCS football. He didn't face any good competition. The truth is likely somewhere in the middle. From what you see so far of Garoppolo in practice, which is he closer to, the guy who put up those phenomenal numbers or a guy who maybe is in over his head in terms of the competition?
Yeah, you know, I think in terms of the over-the-head based on competition, I think he's proven to a certain degree, and I know it's only preseason, and there are plenty of preseason heroes that never play down in the NFL, but I think you saw him make a nice adjustment last year, the first game against the Redskins, held on the ball too long, I believe two interceptions, and they drilled into him all that next week. Like, it's not how we run the offense. You know how we run the offense. Ball gets out quick decision, get rid of it, and let the guys do the work after the catch. And then they went down to New Orleans, and he had a terrific week of practice with the Saints and joint practices, and then had I think it was 28 of 32 in that game. And while I know that you're not getting the full extent of the defense in terms of coverages, and again, you're playing against some guys who won't be playing and were working at Starbucks by, you know, the end of August, that there was something to that. I know in talking with, you know, guys around the building, and not just from the coach's perspective, but some of the players, a good amount of confidence in his ability to get it done. And I think, look, the hard part for us as fans is, and media, is you're going to look at it and you're going to compare it to Brady. Well, that's really not fair to pretty much anybody, because Brady is, if not the best quarterback ever, he's in the discussion for the best quarterback ever. So what we have to do is kind of compare. I'm just kind of comparing him to where he was last year at this point, and I think he's made strides. I think he's been more vocal, which I think is important, obviously, because it's his. He's going to shepherd this team for 4 weeks. So I think those are the sorts of things that I look at, and I feel like, I don't know if he'll come out and, you know, throw 16 touchdown passes and no interceptions. I think that's probably asking for too much, but I think he can do a nice job of keeping the sea warm until Brady gets back and putting them in position to win, and more importantly, not putting them in position to lose.
Mike, how are some of the new guys fitting in, like Martellus Bennett or Chris Hogan?
I'll tell you what, from almost to a man, the new guys, the veterans that they brought in, Knighton, Bennett, Hogan, Chris Long, there are definite positives that you see. I like the personality they brought to the table. It's good for us, but I also think there's just a certain wisdom to these guys. I mean, been somewhere else, played somewhere else, and had success somewhere else that's allowed them to kind of give them a little bit of cachet to just sort of be who they are and speak on what they want to speak. And look, Bennett, if he can stay healthy and stay, you know, keep his head out of the clouds, which has been a bit of a problem for him at times, and I don't see any reason why he shouldn't keep his head out of the clouds considering it's a contract year, the potential with Ian Gronkowski is outstanding, right? I mean, you're talking about two guys that, as Belichick said, are basically from a skill set interchangeable, and that allows you to do some different things offensively that you wanted to do with Scott Chandler last year, but Chandler, A, not the same talent level that Bennett was, and then obviously disappointing and then hurt, so it never quite materialized. Long's an interesting guy, too, because he's a guy who played on the outside, and now you're seeing them work a little bit on the inside as they try to sort of maximize getting their best rushers on the field in pass-rushing situations. So I think I like a lot of what they've done in the offseason, very early, but it looks like some of these things are going to stick, and they found some keepers in this group.
We're talking with Mike Giardi, Comcast Sportsnet New England. Quick slants. Is there any concern, and if so, what's the level of concern about the health of Amendola and Edelman?
Edelman and Amendola, probably from day one, I mean, they're still on the puff, but running hard, even off to the backfield, running routes and running, you know, planning, cutting, doing all those sorts of things. So I almost feel like they're not completely 100% cleared, but I think if they had to play, if this was a had-to-play situation, they could do it, and I think they can't be too far off in terms of getting them back on the field, which is obviously going to benefit Garoppolo, because right now, when you look at some of the reps they're taking with the ones, you know, yeah, you have your Gronks and your Bennett, but then it's guys like Chris Harper and Aaron Dobson, and even guys that I'm sure some people have never heard of, guys like DeAndre Carter and the draft pick Devin Lucian, who's a sixth or seventh rounder, that probably aren't going to get reps with the ones when it all starts to come together. So it's looked pretty solid from an offensive standpoint with the receivers so far, and you haven't even seen your best ones out there.
One of the guys that maybe fans don't talk about a whole lot, but you mentioned earlier on social media today, has looked pretty good early in camp, is James Devlin.
Yeah, you know, it's sort of an underrated aspect to what happened to their running game last year was his absence. And, you know, I wasn't one of those people that thought, you know, that he's a lock to make the team. You know, they did some different things. They signed Clay Harbor and they gave him a decent amount of money in the offseason. And he's sort of not necessarily the blocker that Devlin is, but sort of a kind of a jack-of-all-trades, H-back tight end, fullback type. So there's some definite competition there, but I think early on you've seen that same sort of – first of all, he looks healthy, and that's good. He's running like he normally did. That's good. But, like, just in some of these contact drills and these run drills, just laying people to waste. Defensive linemen, linebackers, doesn't matter, and that's an aspect that was sorely missed last year. They tried a bunch of different guys at that spot and never really found anybody that could do the sort of the same thing that Devlin did. So I think he's made a good first impression here. And I know Brady called him the best fullback in the league a couple of years ago. I expect nothing less from Tom, but there's been a couple moments where during the course of camp where Devlin's done something, and not just Brady, but other guys have gone over and given him a pat on the back. I think there's a great amount of respect for who he is and what he's capable of bringing to the team.
Mike, with word filtering out on social media in the last week or so that the Patriots might be working on an extension behind the scenes with Rob Gronkowski, with the other guys that are going to be due for a bump in pay, that what do you think the hierarchy is for the Pats going forward? Who's the most important?
Well, I think, you know, it's kind of interesting because the Rosenhauses they don't do anything. They like show, and I'm wondering if some of that might have been some show, like we put it out there that we're doing some conversations or talking to the Patriots so that the Gronkowski Inc. and Gordy Gronkowski is very much involved in his son's dealings, knows that at least Rosenhaus is trying to make things happen or giving the appearance of making things happen. Patriots have always been about rewarding their best players. And certainly, you know, at times they've been called, I don't know, cheap, but they're not willing to spend the big money. It's not really true. They gave Wilfork a massive deal at the time. When Gronkowski got his deal, he was the highest-paid tight end in the league history. Logan Mankins, at the time, they gave him his money, which he had to fight for, but when he got it, highest-paid interior offensive lineman. So it's not as if they won't go there. And I think with Gronkowski, if they are in deeper discussions about it, it's just about this guy's the best. And there's a, you know, we're not afraid to pay the best the kind of money they deserve. Now, when you go to the next level and you say, well, these so many different guys, and you look at the big three, Hightower, Collins, and Butler, but they control two of the three guys. And Butler's a restricted free agent, so his leverage is to hold out and hold out only. And obviously he came to camp this year, so that's not the tax he's taking for this year. And then with one or the other, Collins or Hightower, you can franchise them. So right off the bat, you've got control of two of those three guys. And then the question is, can you hammer out a long-term deal? You know, Hightower seemed like the likely guy to me to approach first, in the sense that making a good chunk of change this year, $7.75 million against the cap, you can move some of that money around, lessen his cap hit, spread it out over the life of a 5 or 6 year deal, and take care of him. And I think he's very much the centerpiece of that defense. However, I think, and I tried to make this clear, I don't think any of these guys, with the way the money is going and the way the cap keeps going up, are necessarily willing to take the hometown deals. And I don't mean that, you know, maybe $1 million less or $2 million less, but I think there's so much money out there that these guys are willing, especially I think in Collins and Hightower's part, to sort of roll the dice. And if we don't get something worked out to my liking, then I'm not afraid to hit the open market, because in the open market, if they have any kind of seasons that they've had in the past, they're going to get paid stupid money. I mean, Collins, someone could offer him $50 million guaranteed. I really don't think that's out of the question if he has a good year. And, you know, he's made less than, when he's done this year, he'll have made less than $4 million. And that's before agent fees and taxes and so forth. And, I mean, that's more money than most of us make, 99.9% of us make. But in terms of football, that's not a lot. I think these guys are willing to bet on themselves. And, you know, you hope they don't get hurt, because that would obviously be difficult for them. But I think it's kind of a smart tack to take.
Mike, before we let you go, is figuring out who's going to play on the offensive line, maybe after getting Garoppolo comfortable, the most important thing they do in preseason?
I think so, and I think it's kind of interesting, because you went into this and they had a ton of guys on the interior, at least at guard and center. You said that they've invested draft capital in and have gotten some significant playing time over the last year or two, and they traded for Jonathan Cooper as part of the Chandler Jones deal. He was a former top 10 pick who hadn't quite panned out in Arizona. And already we've had a spate of injuries. Trey Jackson has never even gotten started. He's still on the PUP from last season, from the injury he suffered last season. So he hasn't been cleared to practice yet. Jack Mason finally got involved in some contact drills over the last couple of days, as he's off the pup now, but he's got to work his way back. Cooper left the field on Saturday. Haven't seen him since. The report was plantar fasciitis. Seems a little severe to me to have a guy who was carted off who had plantar fasciitis. Makes me wonder if maybe he suffered a tear in the plantar fasciitis, but again, that's just me spitballing. It just seems like there's a little bit too much there in terms of getting carted off. And then you have Stork, who suffered another concussion, and that's 4 documented in 4 years going back to college, and that's, again, just a documented one. So all of a sudden, what was an intriguing competition on the inside has become almost attrition. I mean, you've got guys like Joe Tooney, who's actually been the left guard since minicamp, the rookie out of NC State, cementing his spot with not a lot of competition. And I think that's probably, and now David Andrews probably cements himself as the center with Stork dealing what he's dealing with. And I don't think that was necessarily the plan, or at least they wanted there to be a competition and a push and pull. And you're not necessarily getting that because of the injuries. But Skarnecki said, I want the best 5. And I don't know if you can come away with that now for that first week. And it may be a situation like it was in 2014, where it takes you 4 or 5 weeks to figure that out, and that's a little bit concerning, considering you'll be starting a guy who's never started a meaningful NFL game in his career, and he'll be doing it for the first 4.
Mike Giardi of Comcast Sportsnet New England. You guys do the greatest coverage out there on the Patriots, so look forward to watching it all season long. Thanks, as